Hey, it's a Mesereau Monday. Let's welcome our first guest. It's Dr. Greg Lunsford. He's the Managing Director and Wealth Advisor at Mesereau Wealth Management. Greg, I can call you Greg, right?
You can.
You've earned the doctor, though, but I'll call you Greg through the rest of the show, okay?
Okay.
Thanks for coming on the program today.
Thank you for the invitation.
And you've been doing this a long time.
I've been in financial services for 30 years, so half of it in corporate investment banking, the other half of it in wealth management.
And I imagine during that time you've seen some things.
I have seen some things, and I think that's what makes a good financial advisor, people who have gone through cycles and seen some things.
Yeah.
I've had three decades of experience.
And Mesereau as a whole, I mean, this is the foundation of what they do, wealth management for eight decades.
Absolutely. Our private client business is what we were founded on. We've been in business for 85 years. This is our 85th anniversary, and so we're keep going.
We're going to dive more into the book you wrote, but what is the book you wrote as a published author? I want you to you brought a copy too, didn't you?
I did bring
like any good author into a radio station, you show it there. Tell us about it.
The book is titled Exit from Work, and what it talks about is the changing dynamics in terms of making the work transition. I don't want to say the word retirement. We were very careful not to say the word retirement when we wrote the book, because what we found in our research is that retirement is a negative experience and has a negative connotation for a number of people for reasons we'll dive into during this interview. So it's titled Exit from Work as We Know It, which may be a full exit, may be a partial exit, and the reason for writing the book is just to explain that the exit isn't what we once thought it was, where mm-hmm. you go sit in a rocking chair and hope you can fulfill all the items on your bucket list. We're living longer. We have more personal freedom, fewer obligations to others in a lot of cases. And so this is actually not a transition from middle age to old age, but a transition to this undefined period, which in academic literature we call the third age, and then you go into old age. And in the third age, it could actually be your best age.
Yeah.
If you set it up right.
If you set it up right, that's key. We're going to talk about the markets and some things that we saw today in just a moment. Your Money Matters here on this Mesereau Monday. I got to get my pad of paper and pen because, Greg, I always learn so much from the Mesereau folks. I need to be writing these things down. I hope our listeners are, too. We're chatting with Dr. Greg Lunsford, who is a wealth advisor, managing director there, too, over at Mesereau. And the markets today, four straight days in a row of a win. We'll take it, right? In the green.
This year, we'll take whatever we can get. It has been a tough start of the year. We're glad to see some rebounding in the second half. And, you know, there have been some good stories to tell lately. Friday, both the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ posted their fourth consecutive week of gains, which is the longest streak since November.
Yeah.
We had a CPI that was flat, so mm-hmm. it looks like maybe we're taming inflation. And then the economy added a half a million jobs on Friday. So
right.
We don't know where we are in the cycle, but it's better news than we've been listening to in the past.
Right, exactly. It doesn't mean that there's not going to be bad news. We're hearing some housing things, but the market. And we kind of talked about this before we went on the air, the idea of what they've priced in or not. And that's kind of a difficult world to figure out exactly where we are. I mean, it may feel like we're getting towards a recession in some ways. The market may not respond accordingly. It's confusing for people that maybe don't pay attention to the everyday stuff, right?
Correct. Correct. But at least we have a few data points that can result in positive sentiment. And then when you add on top of it, prices at the pump are getting better. I mean, there are some reasons such as the slowdown in China that add to it. Of course, that slows down the demand for fuel. We'd rather see an increase in supply of fuel driving down the price of fuel, but we'll take what we can get.
Right, whatever brings it down. And yeah, you mentioned China. They cut their interest rates is the news of the day today, as they have a very sluggish economy. Now they're doing zero COVID protocol. They're having a housing problem as well. When you look at what we're dealing with here in the Fed, they have a difficult job here because they're trying to show how serious they're taking that. And I feel like the last couple of meetings we've seen that. But they don't want to go too far, right? They got to land this plane. I know that's the analogy we all use. Easier said than done.
Yes, the Fed has a tough job. It has a dual mandate. The first one is it has to keep employment up. However, when employment is too hot, you have too many dollars in the system, which can drive inflation. The other thing is they have to keep inflation cool, right? And so it's a balancing act, right? And they're trying to do it in such a way that they keep the economy growing, but at the same time, they're not overheating feeding the inflation. And so you have so many dollars chasing so few goods that prices just continue to rise to the point that they're unbearable.
For sure. And speaking of prices, I've got a bunch of texts after I talked about the price of eggs. Someone says, John, Walmart, great value. Condensed soups have gone up 50 cents to 58 cents. Last week up 68 cents. Six Rio says, I went to go buy cold cereal. Cheerios and Shredder were up to $9 a box. So it's a disconnect sometimes, right? What we hear on the markets and what we feel and good news versus what we're still seeing. There's some lagging things that have to change.
Correct. And, you know, the CPI, although flat, and it's a sign that prices are coming down, energy prices definitely coming down. But when you look at the month over month for food prices, there are still challenges in that area.
Mm-hmm. Now, when we see good data, like we were pleased with the CPI report, the year to year is still way too high, but we're doing better there. The jobs report still coming in well. And a month ago was all talk of recession. Where do you guys look at in terms of Mesereau? What are signposts that you're looking for at Mesereau that you're talking with clients about to forecast or at least be ready for a possible recession? How does that work in your office?
Well, definitely the two things that you just mentioned. As my colleague Bob mentioned the last time we had someone from Mesereau, usually in a recession you see job losses. At the same time, you see prices going up. We're not seeing that dynamic right now. So that is a key indicator. And so we also look at are people feeling confident about going out and buying goods and services? And people are still going to the stores. So
yeah, it's an unusual time.
It's an unusual time.
Is this the weirdest market you've seen in 30 years?
It absolutely is the weirdest market. But
and economy overall, I should say. Yeah.
They just keep getting weirder, right? So 2008, that was the weirdest market I saw then. 2020 with the pandemic, definitely unprecedented times there. I think the lesson to take away from all of this is that we can find ourselves in unusual situations, but we always rebound.
Right.
Right. And so it's very interesting when I'm talking to clients right now, it's a very interesting response. So in psychology, there's this thing is called bad is stronger than good. But basically, what it gets down to is that when you have a bad experience, it has a stronger impact on you than you have a good experience. So you'll have a person, say you and I are playing a game, you win $50, and then you turn around and you lose $50. You're going to think more about the $50 you lost than the $50 you made. And so it's interesting when I have now there's one situation where good can be better than stronger than bad, and that is when you have had enough good experiences that you can look back on them and say, even though I had this one bad experience, I've had enough good experiences that I know that at the end of the day I should stay the course. And so it's very interesting when I talk to clients right now, and I try to be very proactive. We try to be proactive and call them to anticipate what their concerns may be. The ones that have been in the markets for decades say, you know what, I have a long-term view. I understand. I survived the recession of the 80s. Then there was the go-go 90s behind that. Yeah. Then there was the dot-com bust that came after that. And then we recovered from that. And then there was the bust in real estate and on and on and on. So I've had enough good experiences following bad experiences that I continue to believe in the strategy and that we'll get there. Where I tend to have the problems is when I have someone who just came into liquidity. Let's say that someone was a business owner and they never invested in the capital markets, and this is their first go at it, and they just retired and they're frozen. It's like, you know, and so what you're trying to have this conversation. Well, now is a good time to buy because the market is low,
right?
But they're paralyzed,
yeah, right?
Because they have not had enough good experiences in the market, so all they can really focus on is on that bad one.
That's interesting. So the psychology is of the recency of the bad that sticks with you. You can overcome that having had many or a few sprinkled in bad experiences, but overall gains. And that's tough because the people that are maybe the most insecure about a market like this are the people that may have the longest ramp to build towards retirement. If someone is into liquidity or they're just saving for the first time and they're in their 20s and they're scared at this time, this is the worst time for someone in their 20s to be scared, right?
That's right. You have a long view and you have a period of decades before you will need to call on those funds, right? So if you look at historical trends, although the past is no guarantee of the future, there's evidence that would support that. If the past does repeat itself, even though there's no guarantee, you should come out okay.
For sure. Tell you what, let's take a quick break. I want people to know they can go to Mesereau.com, M-E-S-I-R-O-W.com, and reach out to them because they're people that can help you out in all sorts of circumstances. Greg, we'll do a little bit more before the news break here on WGN. 720 WGN on this Mesereau Monday, continuing our chat. Got about a minute or so before the news, Dr. Greg Lunsford. And Greg, we've been chatting about retirement a little earlier in your book, Exit from Work, What Will the New You Look Like? What's a trend you're seeing now with different experiences people want to have in, I don't want to say the R word, retirement, no, and as they exit from work?
Well, the big trend is just to understand that it is not your grandfather's exit or your grandfather's retirement. It's okay to say
it's not the Golden Girls.
It's not. It's not this, we leave a place of work and there is a close time period between the time that we retire and we expire. Mm-hmm. And so therefore we run to this bucket list and say, how many rounds of golf can I play or how many cities can I visit? Mm-hmm. And hopefully I get them all in before I get sick, too sick to do it. If you really look at the fact that, and you talked with Bob about RMDs last time, mm-hmm. and so if you look at that actuarial table, it has a life expectancy of about age 90 or so.
Yeah.
So if a person is retiring or exiting in their 60s, they're really more middle aged than they're our old
100%.
Age, right? And so what were you thinking about? What were the past 60-year-olds thinking about when they were middle-aged? When they were 40, they were thinking about, I can conquer the world. There's a number of things that I can do out there. They weren't throwing in the towel. So the argument is, and the rationale for why people view it negatively is they're kind of being typecast into this corner where it's time for you to just let it go.
Right.
And emotionally and psychologically, they're just not there.
They're not there. We're going to get to how people can save for that dream that they want. What'd you call it? The third stage?
It's the third age. It's the academic term.
All right. Let's make sure we get all our listeners to the third age. We'll do that after the news here on this Mesereau Monday on Your Money Matters. 720 WGN on a Mesereau Monday here on Your Money Matters. And Greg, you're helping me plan my own retirement. I appreciate that.
Glad
Greg,
to help.
Yeah. Greg Lunsford, Managing Director and Wealth Advisor at Mesereau Wealth Management. Mesereau.com is a great place to get started for all sorts of things. We're talking about retirement and you know, you've dove into this, you know, changing retirement landscape for people and what it looks like now. And I fear that people listening who are maybe in their late 40s, 50s, maybe even early 60s, who have maybe not gotten as far into the planning as they thought they wanted to. Maybe things have happened along their lives, right? We're all different. And they're saying, well, what he's talking about isn't for me. Mm-hmm. That's not true, right?
It's not true at all. As a matter of fact, when we talked earlier, you asked me to list out a couple of pitfalls.
Yeah.
And at the top of my list, the number one pitfall is avoidance. A lot of, I'm often amazed when people walk into my office and we sit down and talk and they find out for the first time that they can actually afford to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And they're late stage.
Their eyes open up and they go, wait, hold on.
Right. And so I'm like, you're 60 years old and you're just now, you know, it was this conversation. And that's one of the wonderful things about what we do at Mesereau and the things that we do as planners. But oftentimes people know that the economy has changed, that our safety nets in terms of there are no more pensions for a lot of places. Only 20% of companies offer retirement benefits, former retirement benefits. And so you have to get it on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some tools out there like 403Bs and 401Ks that are offered through your employer, and maybe they offer a match, but people go, well, that was too scary, so I didn't do it, and so it's all over. And the reality is, it's never too late to really start.
Mm-hmm.
And so avoidance tends to be the biggest pitfall out there because people think that they don't have time to do it. And what I'm trying to say is, well, if you're living longer, mm-hmm. then you have the ability to make up time,
mm-hmm.
right? But what you can't do is get to the end of the game, right, and then go,
what am I going to do now?
What am I going to do now?
Right.
And there's some things you can do to help with that. One of the things that puts us in this position is there's a lack of financial literacy in this country.
100%.
Right. That we don't teach financial planning principles in elementary school to the extent you can get it is at the kitchen table with your parents. If you can get it there, most families don't talk about money. And so we end up in this hole where we just don't have the self-confidence to deal with this. So one of the things that I talk about, and there's a chapter on in the book, is financial self-efficacy. And so what efficacy is the belief that you can make things work based on your own ability. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people feel as though I have to sit back and just wait for this thing to happen. There are a number of things that you can do to change your financial landscape based on your own ability. The first one is just becoming financial literate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, understanding your company's benefit plans, or if you're an entrepreneur, understanding what plans you can go out and grab for yourself to better your odds when it's your time to exit.
On that note, the number of people that I walk around and talk with in different jobs that I work, and I ask, well, what's the match here? What's your 401k match? And they say, I don't know. It drives me insane, because your HR rep will tell you that, and they'll tell you how to sign up. And that's on you. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to judge anyone. It's okay if you haven't done it yet, right? We're going to give you a pass.
That's right.
But you find out tomorrow. Because that could change your life.
If your employer is going to match you dollar for dollar for money that you put into your retirement plan, what investment instrument do you know that's out there that you get 100% return on just for signing up?
Nothing. Not a single thing.
I can't think of anything.
So a lot of it is taking ownership, but I get people's fear. Like I'm empathetic to that, because mm-hmm. there's things that I probably should have gone to the doctor, you know, weeks ago for something that's bothering me. I think that's in the same vein. We fear being told that we're a little behind, or we fear being told, when we realize that, just like going to the doctor, they're going to get you to the place you need to be. That's what you guys do.
And the other thing is, stop beating yourself up about 100%. It. It's okay. You're not the only person in this box, right?
Right?
So, and that's where having a good advisor that you could partner with to help you develop a strategy and a plan to work your way out and improve your odds can be helpful. And that's how we work with our clients at Mesirow.
All right, we're going to get through a couple more pitfalls and other ways to help make sure you're on the right track. But first, let's get a look at weather and traffic. Mary Vandeveld, 720 WGN on a Mesirow Monday. It's 6:48. Dr. Greg Lunsford here, Managing Director and Wealth Advisor with Mesirow Monday, Mesirow Wealth Management. And Greg, we were talking about pitfalls of retirement, or, you know, planning for your exit. And what are some of the other ones that you've noticed that people make that are avoidable?
Another big pitfall is not collaborating with your partner.
Mm-hmm.
Approximately 50% of couples have not ever sat down and did a retirement calculation to understand what their expenses may be. 20% of couples don't even talk about it. And so it's a really interesting dynamic now, because the largest age demographic for remarriage is between 55 and 64. And the challenge is becoming more challenging, because usually a person is established at that stage.
Yeah.
So they don't really want to talk about money. It was really
right.
More like, we don't talk about the life insurance money that I got from my deceased spouse. I don't want to talk about. It's just that we decided to get married. We decided to split all the bills in half, and that works. While you're working, have you ever had a conversation about what your independent income flows are going to be when you stop working?
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the big pitfalls is, and I think that's when you go into this avoidance, because this could be a very difficult conversation depending on what obligations you have to family members at this point in time. But not having the conversation only makes it worse going down the road.
For sure. I mentioned things that people can do to avoid, but there are some things out of our control, aren't there?
Mm-hmm.
And that is another pitfall.
Absolutely. So, you know, another thing is, we don't take inventory of things that can occur to us that could be unexpected. 50% of caregivers never anticipate that they will have to care for a loved one.
Mm.
They're forced into the role. And so what happens is, of those caregivers, about 60% of them have financial challenges, either because in order to be the primary caregiver, they have to maybe leave a job or cut their hours back from working a job, and therefore they're not able to save at the same trajectory that they thought they were going to be. So it becomes the spiral effect. And so just doing simple things like having a conversation with your loved ones to make sure you understand how they can make it if there were something catastrophic that could happen, such as a stroke that would cost for skilled nursing. Are there things in place like long-term care insurance, or are there adequate resources in terms of their savings that could prepare, that could help them get some skilled nursing in the house so you don't have to do so? You know, I wrote an article maybe a couple years ago, because I ran into a family that all that they had for the husband and wife, both of their parents were living. Three of them got dementia at the same time.
Oh my gosh. And you can't, I mean, you got to it's hard to anticipate that,
it's
right?
It's hard to anticipate that, right?
And I think that whether it's something dramatic like that and horrifying, or just other peaks and valleys of life, I imagine that's what makes it hard. But those are conversations you probably have with people. Like, and maybe that's one of the best reasons why you would want someone like yourself, someone at Mesirow, a wealth advisor to help you out, because we see ourselves in a certain way, and maybe there's blind spots we haven't looked at.
Absolutely. And so you got to bear in mind that we're living longer. Also, the person you're caring for may live longer as well. And so just a couple simple things like getting a long-term care insurance policy, getting certain powers of attorney put in place so that you can take actions in the event that something unforeseen should happen, mm-hmm. could allow you to be able to enjoy that third age so much more.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. All right, you got another one for us? A pitfall people can make sure they're trying to avoid as we move forward here?
Failing to set a budget.
Yeah.
Only a third of the population has a budget.
Like a real budget.
A real budget.
Not like, oh, I generally spend this amount, because that's what I got.
Well, John, I'm just going to take a guess at this, but okay. I bet you know someone that says, I don't know where my money goes.
I bet I do. Yes.
Yeah, there are a number of people that don't understand.
Oh, like, where to go? How did I have this much in credit card?
That's exactly right. Yeah, the bill comes at the end of the month.
And they're like, how?
I didn't realize I spent that much.
Oh, I'm sure.
Correct?
I'm sure I've done that.
And so what I try to get people to understand, and I also put in the book, the most successful people that we know financially have budgets. I mean, you look at the Bill Gates of the world, you look at the Warren Buffetts, they have teams of accountants and financial advisors to come in and make sure that their inflows are greater than their outflows.
Right. For sure. And then that's people looking at that, teams of people looking at that.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. And writing that down. And also, I imagine that it's also kind of prognosticating what your budget might be in the future, too.
Absolutely.
And that's easier said than done.
Absolutely. So when we sit down with clients, we look at the budget, and we also forecast out what the needs could be in the future.
For sure. Yeah, what's that meeting like when you first meet with someone, right? If someone's going to call you up and say, I like Greg, I want to talk to Greg, and why wouldn't you? What does it look like? What should someone bring to the table that day?
Well, we're a firm that leads with advice. So the most important thing that when we get together for the first meeting is that it's really a listening session. And so I call it discovery, because what we're trying to do is learn about the family, and to the extent that they're very interested in us, we want them to learn about us. But the most important thing is that we understand their values. You can have two families that have the same financial wherewithal, but their values may be totally different. Some may be very philanthropic. Some may say, hey, I want to spend my last dollar as I take my last breath. So the first conversation is to really get an understanding of what is the purpose of money.
Mm-hmm.
And then to the extent that we can understand what their money values are, you know, how does money make you feel? What is your risk tolerance with money? Those are important things that we use to help us build customized plans for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so every family is different. So the solution for every family is different.
We were talking about it's never too late. And it's also never too early, by the way. But what I want to know is there a momentum to saving? This is what I feel like when I finally mm-hmm. got going. You know, it went from a fear of the unknown to an excitement of being able to tackle it. And it kind of like built on itself. Do you feel that way with clients?
Oh,
absolutely.
And basic finance books will explain the power of compounding. I mean, and you know what? The University of Chicago did a study not too long ago, and I think they came up with a very low level of people who are financially literate. Don't quote me on this, but mm-hmm. I think it was more like 30% or so.
Yeah.
And it was based on five basic questions. And one of them was, can you explain compound interest?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very simple thing. And it's okay if you don't know. And most people don't know. Like I said, only about 30% of people do know, right? And so it's okay. It's never too late to say, hey, I don't know something.
Right. And that's good. And compounding interest is obviously interest that compounds. I was trying to come up with a better definition. We talk about it a lot on the show, and people will call and they'll be like, if I save this amount and I put it into a calculator, and it's always shocking to see what $100 a month when you're 25 years old means when you're 65. It's insane.
Exactly right. And then, you know, there's a rule in finance called the rule of 72. I don't know if you're familiar with it or not.
No, please give it to us.
You take the number 72. Take the number 72 and you divide it by an interest rate. So if I took the number 72 and I divided it by 7.2%, that tells me how many years it takes to double my money. So in this case, it takes 10 years to double my money. Right?
7.2 is a pretty average number for stock markets and such like that. 10 years to double. Do that four times.
Correct.
Your number
goes way up. If you think it's too late and you're 40 and you say, hey, let me calculate out what return I need, and am I comfortable with, after I sit down and I talk to my advisor or I read some things on my own or however you want to do it, and say, am I comfortable with the risk profile that is needed to get this return?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I can work my way through this.
Right. I saw in your notes that you work with athletes sometimes as well. That must be fun. We only got about a minute left. I'm not asking you to name drop here. That probably wouldn't be allowed anyways.
It would not. But.
No. But that's an interesting world too, and they're just like normal people, aren't they?
They're more normal than we've given them credit for in the past.
Right.
And so that was one of the really interesting things for me as a researcher, is when I first started to become very curious about retirement, and the reason I was becoming curious about retirement is because it was the real estate bust of 2008. We were in the Great Recession, and people were coming in the door that were giving exit packages from their companies, and they had great financial wherewithal, but they weren't happy. So mm-hmm. I was trying to figure out, why was this experience such a negative experience when we had been led to believe that it was an economic choice? And if you financially could do it, why wouldn't you do it?
Yeah.
Right. And so then I started to ask myself the question, as I started to dig in and research, is where have we seen a group of individuals that have a great deal of longevity in front of them and great financial resources on how to behave? And it was professional athletes. And so we look at some of the dysfunctional behavior that we've seen with athletes, and we're now seeing that dysfunctional behavior play out with people who have everyday careers.
Yeah.
And the problem is, and that's the main reason I wrote the book, is when you break from what you've been doing and you love, there's an identity break. And so you have to do more than just understand the financial implications. You have to figure out how you're going to replace that thing that gives you satisfaction. We tend to look at work as something that gives us economic value.
Yeah.
But work also provides a socialization.
For sure.
A lot of us get our friends from work. And even if you work with people you don't like, they give you something to chuckle about when you get home, because you go home and talk about the people you don't like, right?
You've given me a lot. I hate to cut you off because you have so many great things to say. What's the name of the book again? One more time.
Exit from Work.
That's going to do it for Mesro. We're out of time, Greg. I'm so sorry.
We're just getting going.
Yeah. 800-MESRO, 800-637-4769, 800-MESIROW. Greg, we'll talk again soon, okay?
Sounds good.
All right, we got a break. Then we got news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Then John Landecker on WGN.